Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Rev Midnight Black Mass, a production brought to you by GeorgeWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you discussions and interviews with figures from wrestling, entertainment, and general pop culture. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Midnight Black Mass.
Here's the real truth. There are 8 million people in this city, and those teeming masses exist for the sole purpose of lifting the few exceptional people onto their shoulders.
GeorgeWrestlingHistory.com. Lots of great shows on that network you can catch out.
Georgia Wrestling Now with Jonathan Williams and my boy from the Hate Junkies, Mr. Danny Only, the Human Hand Grenade, hosting that, covering all things on the current Georgia wrestling scene. You also have a Ringside Rap hosted by the legendary Les Thatcher and the founder of our feast here at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, Mr. Rich Tate, bringing you all the current news on the entire world of professional wrestling. That's WWE, TNA, and a whole lot more. And then there is Peach State Pandemonium, which is hosted by legendary Georgia referee Bobby Simmons. Gives you a great look back at the classics in Georgia wrestling. And then, of course, here on the Midnight Black Mass, where we look at the dark side of all things on the side of entertainment, and also bring in a variety of guests from all fields and try to get their perspectives on life, because that's very important, this crazy ride and roller coaster that we're all living. But my wrestling plugs, in any event, tomorrow night, NWA Anarchy, Cornelia, Georgia. Go to NWAAnarchy.net for more details, but I'll be there in the main event with the NWA Anarchy Heavyweight Champion teaming with another NWA Anarchy, NWA Arena original, Cool Seth DeLay, the King of Wrestling, and Cornelia to take on the Temptation, Shawn Peppers, the NWA North American Champion, and his protege, the young Bro Newsome. And that's going to be one hell of a main event tomorrow night in Cornelia for an international television taping. And then coming up on April the 7th, a big card in Blue Ridge, Georgia, for NWA Deep Southern Championship Wrestling. The Reverend will be there, and I'll be making my presence known. Big main event on that card is going to be headlined by the NWA North American Champion, the Temptation, Shawn Peppers, against former WWE and ECW superstar Al Snow. That's April 7th in Blue Ridge, Georgia. You want to check that out or find them on Facebook at Deep Southern Championship Wrestling, LLC. Next up, it'll be NWA Chattanooga, April the 20th, returning to Soddy Daisy Middle School. I'll be there in the big Southern Heavyweight Championship match, managing the Deadly Sin 7 against Teen Excitement Drew Haskins. That card will be headlined by a six-man strap, fans participation strap match, with Ace Rockwell, his protege Logan Alvey, and the Hellbilly Jesco Blue taking on the team of Jimmy Rave Approved. That'll be Mike Posey, Corey Hollis, and Chip Day, and that'll be a fans participation strap match. And go to NWAChattanooga.com for more details. On to the music news. This is the summer of the package concert we've talked about in previous weeks. The Mayhem Fest, which is going to feature Slipknot, Anthrax, Slayer, and Motorhead. I've already got my tickets for Iron Maiden and Alice Cooper in Atlanta at the old Lakewood Amphitheater. Hi-Fi Buy, as they're calling it now. But you know the Rev, I like to live in the past. Also, another huge headlining tour has been announced that we've talked about the rumors of before, and that's the legendary Kiss. Rev's a goddamn card-carrying member of the Kiss Army. I got them inked on my flesh. So, for the first time in my life, getting to see Kiss. No, it ain't Peter and Ace, but it's Gene and Paul and Eric Singer and Tommy Thayer. Tremendous musicians. Looking very much forward to that with Motley Crue, who I saw last year, and certainly did not disappoint. Also at the former Lakewood Amphitheater, now Hi-Fi Buys in Atlanta, Georgia, on July 23rd. I'll be seeing them there. Tickets are purchased for that. Big tour announced called Death to All. It will be a tribute to the legendary death metal pioneers, Death, of course, fronted by the late, great Chuck Schuldiner, who passed away due to cancer a few years ago. And I think it's a great idea that they're doing this tour. Going to have seven former members of the band Death on the tour. Gene Hoglan, Sean Reinert, Steve DiGiorgio, Scott Clendenin, Paul Mazdeval, Shannon Hamm, Bobby Colbilly, and a new vocalist by the name of Charles Elliott is going to be hitting the United States. Death to All. I recommend you go check that out. I think Death is one of the premier death metal bands, one of the first bands to do it, and one of the bands to do it the best. Chuck Schuldiner will be forever missed in the world of heavy metal and hard rock, so I'm very excited about the Death for All tour. Moving on, the Boston, Massachusetts police recently cracked down, citing the House of Blues for allowing violent mosh pit dancing and vowed to crack down on what they call dangerous behavior and a public safety hazard. The Boston Herald reports that police cited the club for a license violation because of a mosh pit that broke out during a February 21st show by the band Flogging Molly. Police say 60 concertgoers engaged in the moshing. Police say the dance violated safety rules and the club was cited because security did not intervene. The club has agreed to put up signs saying that mosh pits are banned. That news courtesy of thegauntlet.net. Very interesting. You always wondered how clubs got away with mosh pits, but it was just the metal culture. Now you see one city, and a major one at that, in Boston, cracking down on that. You got to wonder if that's going to spread to other major cities. And will that be a blow to the metal culture? Hey, I'm an old fucking fart, guys. I'm not the guy that gets in a mosh pit anymore. Maybe when I was 20, you know, I'd be out there throwing elbows and knocking punks on the ground just like anybody else. But the 31-year-old Reverend, 31 years old and taking my fair share of knocks to the face and falls on the concrete over the years, the mosh pit ain't for me. I'm the old guy who just tries to remain relevant by staying slightly behind the mosh pit and pushing the fat Mexican guys back into it. But still, I think it's an important part of the metal culture. So I would hate to see it go away. I think it's a good place for young kids to get their aggression. Now, long as they don't get too silly, because, you know, there's always going to be a batter some bitch in that place. And if you try to get too cute, then you're going to get hurt. Metallica releasing, coming next month in April, The Early Days on DVD, which is bound to piss off some fans because they're titling it The Early Days. Of course, that would bring to mind the classic era of Cliff Burton, the late, great, iconic bass player of Metallica, who died in 1986. Tragically, he was a hero to all of us here on the Midnight Black Mass, or some of the classic, even Jason Newsted era from And Justice to All, or Justice for All, or even maybe the Black Album, their most successful album to date. They just played it in its entirety on tour. But no, this footage was recorded during the Load and Unload tours. So I love Metallica. They'll always have a special place in my heart. And honestly, like, as rock albums, those are terrible albums, but they're not Metallica, as you know and love them. They don't speak to me in the manner that those early works did, and I just don't consider them part of the canon, just as me as a fan. I still love Metallica. I still support them, but I'm not down with Load and Unload. And, you know, to call a DVD The Early Days and feature a tour from that era, it takes a balls. But we know Metallica's got four pairs of brass ones, so that's really nothing new. Mark Morton and Lamb of God, of Lamb of God, the guitarist, and Des Ferreira of Devil Driver have now formed a side project called Born of the Storm. Want to check that out. And the final piece of metal news is that promoter Michael Benn, who is the head promoter for the Reading and Leeds Festival over in England, has quote-unquote ruled out offering a place on either festival bills to the band known as Guns N' Roses in its current state. He states that wouldn't have a problem with the classic lineup, but not at the moment. He doesn't feel like the current lineup is right for their festival. So that just kind of gives you an idea of what kind of money is on the table for that original lineup to get together, and I'd like to see it. But you got to be certain that Axl Rose is going to have a retort to that. But anyway, fans, we got some music coming up for you. I talked about these legendary tours. We got some Iron Maiden, Alice Cooper coming up for you. Then we're going to be with the Muji Movie Minute and with our special guest, Raven Mack. We got a jam-packed show. Don't go anywhere. Here is some legendary Iron Maiden out of London, England. This is The Evil That Men Do. We'll be right back. we're back on the Midnight Black Mass. And of course, as always, my best friend since birth, the great Muji himself, has scoured the compound for the best and worst of a horror cinema. It is now time for the Muji Movie Minute, and Muji is live here at the compound with us for this broadcast. Take it away, my brother.
All right, this week we're going to talk about The Resident, which is Hammer's new jump back into the horror game. After not making any movies for a really long time, Hammer came back, got the studio back going. They're pumping movies out, and this is actually their first attempt at like kind of a decent budget movie with the new studio. Stars Hilary Swank, who you, of course, know from the Is She Hot or Not arguments. Also from Wrecking Your Dreams by being in the crappy Karate Kid movie, and a bunch of good stuff too. And then Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who of course is the comedian in Watchmen, is the other main character in the movie, and of course it's Hammer and Christopher Lee still alive, so he's in it. The movie to me was, it was like okay. I'm really kind of don't know how to feel about it because it wasn't really like great, but I can't really pick out anything that was particularly wrong with it. Like, the acting all seemed really good. The story was a decent little story. It was just a classic, stalker story. Basically, Hilary Swank gets a new apartment. Her landlord's really nice to her. They kind of start liking each other. And then the one thing that I can say that I didn't like about the movie was that probably 20 minutes into it, they give you the big reveal that he's stalking her. They show this big, she moves into the place. Then they have what seems to be a chance meeting in an art gallery where they talk to each other. Then you find out that his grandpa is, that Jeffrey Dean Morgan's grandpa is Christopher Lee and has been going to this hospital. And then, like I said, it's really like 20, 25 minutes into the movie. And then they flash back, like right then, to show you how he saw her at the hospital and has kind of set up all these events to happen. Saw she was looking for an apartment and kind of made everything happen. I thought if that would have happened at the end of the movie and they would have done like a little bit longer of a, who is it that's actually stalking her? Because Christopher Lee's creepy. So you immediately think maybe he's the guy that's stalking her. You like see an eye through a window looking at her, things start getting messed up in her apartment, and they kind of give you away that it's him like really early on in the movie. The rest of the movie, it was decent. Like he's after her and, it had its a couple of jump scares where he kind of comes out of nowhere. She fought him off, everything like that. She has a boyfriend that's kind of a weak character that you find out, like, cheated on her, and then he pops back in. So I think that was kind of a mistake because you really don't care if, like, he lives or dies. He was just kind of an extra character to get beat up. Overall, like I said, I think it's, like 55% well done. Like, it's an okay movie, but it's I probably wouldn't watch it again.
Yeah, I have to say, I myself was disappointed in The Resident, and I hate to say that because I go into every horror film that we watch hoping it's going to be the greatest thing I've ever seen. I still have the eyes of a child when it comes to horror cinema and the fact that Hammer was back into the foray. Now, I have to correct you slightly, Muji. Now, you are correct in that this is Hammer's first original movie since reopening the studio. However, the first movie they released when they reopened the studio was the American remake, which I thought was fantastic, of Let the Right One In, of course, dumbed down for us Americans, called Let Me In, the child vampire story. And I really thought that was a strong outing. That was their first release when they reopened the studio, but this The Resident was their first release as an original project. I'm positive of that. That's research that I did. But, it's unfortunate. I was going into this really hoping that this would set me ablaze, and it didn't. It wasn't bad. Wasn't anything wrong with it. It was just not good. And that was my overall opinion on the whole thing.
Yeah, I think one bummer is that it certainly didn't feel like a Hammer movie. With Let the Right One In, it's almost a shot for shot until the last, 20 minutes of the movie remake. And, they kind of just had it thrown out on the table there. Like, they switched up, towards, the end of the movie. The last, third is, was a little bit different. But they pretty much played it exactly. And it's you know, was, I mean, probably almost exactly the same, like, done well as the Swedish version. It's, you know, like, I watched the Swedish version first and then watched that, and I was like, yeah, they were both good. They were almost the same thing. And, you know, that one was kind of already laid on the table for them. They could pretty much just shot for shot do the first two-thirds of it. But this, like, as an original thing, it didn't feel like a Hammer movie either. Like, it had at the beginning kind of like creepy music and stuff, and you saw Christopher Lee in it, but it certainly didn't have that, like, classic, like, every Hammer movie, like, you can almost throw on an old Hammer movie from the 60s or 70s and without ever seeing it, pick it out as being a Hammer movie just from, like, the setting and the feel and stuff. And this didn't really, like, feel so much like one of their movies.
That also was my opinion on The Resident. I thought, you know, not a bad outing, but given the budget that they had and the stars that they had, I expected more. It kind of had that Hammer pacing, like, you know, they started off real slow and built, but they didn't build to a Hammer-worthy finale, in my opinion. It was kind of predictable. Jeffrey Dean Morgan was good in the role. Hilary Swank was okay. I guess that, you know, there's nothing wrong with the movie. I'd recommend checking it out if you ain't got nothing better to do, but I just wouldn't put it at the top of my list. That's all I'm saying. And Moogie, any final thoughts this week or Martin we might be looking at next week?
No, I think that's it. I think next week we'll probably go with something a little bit older and hope for the best.
Yeah, I think that's probably the right decision. I think next week we'll delve into possibly some of Rob's suggestions or maybe even some Hammer classics, just since we opened the vault here hoping that we would our pickles would be tickled by the classic nostalgia of Hammer horror, and it wasn't. Maybe we will dig up a true Hammer horror classic and review it next week. I think that's a good idea. All right, fans, well, there you have it. That's been another edition of the Moogie Movie Minute, fans. We're going to go back to some tunes. We got some Faith No More coming up for you. The Cowboy Song, which is a classic track by them, one of their heaviest tunes, in my opinion. Really great band, highly underrated, called A One-Hit Wonder You Should Respect by Crack Magazine. But they had such a great career after that and such a bizarre band that really didn't fit into any genre that the metal fans, like myself, accepted them. And I think Mike Patton and the crew, that they're back on tour and back out is an amazing thing, and I just wish they would hit some more frequent U.S. dates because I would love to catch Faith No More. And we got our guest Raven Mack coming up here in just a little bit. There's some Faith No More with the Cowboy Song. We'll be right back. back live with another edition of the Midnight Black Mass. And at this time, I have our special guest for the broadcast on the line, calling us from the great state of the Commonwealth of Virginia, Mr. Raven Mack, joining the broadcast. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Appreciate it, Reverend Dan. Appreciate it, man. How's it going?
Oh, it's going fan-fucking-tastic. We're here. I got me a cold Heineken. Been playing some good tunes. We've been talking about all kinds of interesting topics. And now we got our special guest on the show, so it couldn't be better, my friend.
There you go. There you go.
Well, a lot of our fans, of course, are the people that have followed my career over the last 12 or so years in the wild and wacky world of professional wrestling. And first of all, many of them will know you from going back to the NWA Wildside days. You ran a fanzine called the Confederate Mac, and it was quite a talked about ordeal in the locker rooms. I don't know how much you are aware of that, but even Bill Behrens was just fascinated with your writing. He thought you were fantastic. Never really seen a wrestling writer take hold of the product and really understand what we were trying to do like you did. So it really thrilled us that we were reaching somebody that got what we were trying to do. So if you will take us back to what started that, and I know it wasn't just about wrestling, but just the culture around you in general, kind of take us on that journey through the Confederate Mac scene.
Well, Confederate Mac kind of, I lived in Richmond years ago, back in the 90s, and the Confederate Mac kind of sprung from that environment. There was a lot of strange people floating around the city at that point, and you know, it was right on the tail end of the whole PC punk, you know, political correct consciousness and all. And, you know, I grew up amongst junkyard people and flea market people and backroads people and, you know, what people might call trash, but not trash, just dirty people, you know. So there was a certain secret resentment I had towards that whole political correctness, polish things up, let's be polite, because it's just not what I grew up around. And the people I grew up around, even though they might be hard scrabble, rough around the edges, they wasn't bad people. They was good people. They'd stop on the side of the road for anybody that was broke down, that type of thing. So what I wanted to do was just come up with something that was, I don't know, just kind of insulting and shocking on the surface level with the whole Confederate Mac thing. Like, people are like, oh, shit, Confederate, you know, this guy's racist, he's crazy, what's going on? But, like, underneath of it is just, you know, it's that good spirit vibe, man. You know, it's just people getting by, you know, and helping each other out, but not being afraid to let their freak flag fly, for lack of a better terminology. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, man.
Yeah, and I'm glad it got, I mean, that magazine, when I was doing it, it's gone all across the world. I've got people in Australia. I've got people all across this continent that have, you know, become a fan, become a friend, you know. And when I came down to Georgia, I had a real good time hanging out with you guys and checking out the Wildside Arena. It was a blast, man. From what I can remember, I really enjoyed it. And the parts I can't remember, I'm sure were fun, too.
Yeah, we had a damn good time when you graced us with your presence down there in Cornelia. What was it about Wildside that appealed to you so much that, you know, that you were willing to make a trek all the way from Virginia? I mean, that was a several-hour drive, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, for one, at that time, I was just looking for an excuse to go somewhere for the weekend, you know?
Sure.
And it didn't necessarily have to be anything in particular. But, you know, I did do a few road trips where we went and checked out something like that. And kind of went to Wildside just because, you know, I love the South, I love Georgia, but also that what you guys were doing just had such an old school vibe to it, you know? It was more like what I remember when I was a kid watching it on Saturday afternoons, you know? It wasn't all cartoony and stupid and you felt like a dumbass afterwards. You know, I went down there and, I mean, y'all got me hyped up, man. There was old ladies that looked like they was going to stab somebody in the crowd, and it was a good time, man.
And that is truly the Southern flavor that you'll only get at wrestling events around here. I mean, I'm sure there's some salt of the earth folk, you know, in the northern regions and what have you, but I can't imagine them being as rowdy as, say, a Nashville, Tennessee crowd. That's about the wildest I think I've ever worked in front
If you go, to a show, man, if you go to a wrestling show, you want to have, like, you're going to have some old guy who is going to follow somebody and try to fight him. You got to have crazy people who are yelling at the people and want to fight the bad guys and maybe even stab them in the parking lot. You want to have people riled up. And, you know, those people might be considered ignorant by conventional standards. But I don't know, man. I get more joy out of hanging out with that than I would, like, sitting in a place where everybody's wearing a $40 T-shirt and, you know, having the Pavlovian responses where they say the same thing the dude in the ring says, and then we go home at the end of the night and we're broke and hadn't had one fucking emotion the whole evening, you know?
Yeah, I agree, you know, and whether or not they believe it, I love those people. They butter my bread, you know, whether it's in an area like Cornelia where for the first time in 6 years they love me for some reason, or most everywhere else where I get death threats, you know, those people are the ones that make this worth doing, you know, whether it's making them hate me or making them love me, you know, being out there and really connecting with people on that visceral level is an experience that even the best drug cannot top.
Yeah, that's it, man, that's it.
Well, you know, let's talk more about the. You didn't just cover wrestling, you know. You covered some aspects of culture and music and what have you. And you know, as far as that goes, at what end did you decide that it was time to stop doing the Confederate magazine?
Well, the Confederate Mac, it went from being a zine to being a website, and then the website just got to be too much of a time consumer. I put it to the side. I started up again a couple years back doing something called Rojo Neku, which is that's kind of my flavor of things now. It's, for lack of a better term, it's Backroads Kung Fu, I don't know, like Zen Buddhist Kung Fu junkyard fighting training that I kind of share with some of the kids around here who don't have. I've always had this crazy uncle philosophy because, like, I had a couple crazy uncles who helped bring me up, and the crazy uncle is such a benefit because, you know, he can show you all the dumb shit that you can do, but he doesn't have to be attached to you screwing up because he's not your dad, but yet he's still got that family connection, so he doesn't want you to go too far gone. So the crazy uncle can kind of lead you down this road that's a little wilder, but yet responsible, if that makes sense. So I kind of been doing that with some of these kids around here, and the Rojo Neku thing developed from that. So I started putting some writing again up online, and I've had a couple of zines circulate, but I kind of pulled back from all that recently because I'm actually just trying to get some books done now. So we'll see what happens with that, you know. I'm writing mad as ever, but it ain't seeing the light of day just yet. We'll have to wait till next year for that, I guess.
No, that's fucking awesome. I mean, you know, with the quality of your writing, I think it should be in a published format. So I would love to see that. I'd certainly purchase a copy. You know, you talk about the crazy uncle philosophy. That's funny because I had a few crazy uncle influences in my life also. One uncle by the name of Tim, who was my mom's brother, he, son of a bitch, could play bass like Steve Harris from Iron Maiden. But, you know, now he's just, like, content doing his own thing. But at the time, when I was in my formative years, he was right there feeding me the great influences that shaped me to mold me to the man that I am. And also, man, he's not even technically my uncle, but it's actually Muji's uncle, but might as well have been my uncle. Rob, you know, he shaped me with some of his warped philosophies as well. So, you know,
well,
I totally concur with your crazy uncle.
He's your uncle by default.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with the crazy uncle concept whole fucking heartedly. You know, you talked about Rojo Neku. You got that going, and please don't hesitate to plug anything you would like here. This is your time, my friend. Anything you can do to use it to benefit yourself, I totally promote. But in any event, you know, we talked about Rojo Neku and moving on. You know, a lot of our fans have asked about this, and we cover this band a lot here. Lamb of God is out of Richmond, Virginia, and apparently you have quite a history with those guys. Would you care to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, at the same time I came up, you know, in Richmond, that same environment, they were all part of that. You know, we all ran the same circles. you know, things are just popping up. I mean, Richmond has always said it's going to be like the next Austin, Texas, but I think that's, I don't know, I think that's a little crazy, but, like, Richmond's just got this strange vibe, man. It's just a strange city that can be really depressing, it can be really exciting, it can be really inspiring, it can eat you up, you know, and there's a big group of people at that time that's, you know, from that group that there's been, you know, I've got friends that are artists, I got friends that are in bands, you know, Lamb of God, those guys are great. There's another band, RPG, that's associated with them that's real good. You know, writers, some are just heroin junkies, some have died, you know, but there was a real vibrant scene then that, you know, I don't know, man, and I wonder, you know, I think that, like, maybe that area always has that every couple of years, but the older I get and the more I see all the crazies from that time, I just feel like something special was going on in Richmond around that time, you know?
Yeah, there's something about, as a former guest of ours, Robert Everett, who used to play with G.G. Allen and the Carolina Shit Kickers, had said that there's something about a certain magic in space and time that allows certain art to be created. And I don't know if it can be replicated because it's such a unique, a perfect storm of mixtures coming together to create such an environment. But, you know, it's funny because the time you were growing up with those guys, when they were probably burned the priest, it's funny because I was playing in bands here in the Chattanooga area at that time. I was, like, fresh out of high school playing thrash metal stuff. And there's this guy who's a great guy for the Chattanooga scene. I'm going to give a shout-out to him right now. There's a guy named Bobby Rayfield. He actually owns a music store, one of the last true record stores up in Cleveland, Tennessee. And he was one of the first guys to turn me on before they were ever signed. He was always finding local bands, and he was hooking up his bands to play with them. And one of the bands he played with out when he was making his rounds was Burn the Priest. And the first time I ever heard those guys was just on a mixtape, you know, of just demos of other bands. And they grabbed me by the fucking balls at that time. And now to see, I mean, can you believe the stardom that they've achieved? And interesting question. Have you spoken to any of them since that has occurred, and have you noticed
the difference? Oh, yeah, definitely, man, definitely. You know, I keep semi-contact with some of them, you know, if I see them, I've gone to a couple of shows and hung out with them. Actually got to see them when they were on tour with Slayer, and that was a bad time up in Cleveland, man, because I got tore up and was sitting behind the stage watching Slayer from behind the screen with the screen reverse image, and I was just zoned right up out the sky, man, and it was a rough night, but saw him, man, and we got to see him here in Virginia 2 years ago, but I keep up with him. I actually talked to Campbell, the bassist, earlier this week, man. We've got a long history together. Actually, well, I can't really talk about it completely, but, like, the whole crazy uncle Rojo Neku kung fu thing, there were some of us who kind of went through that back in the day, just to kind of, you know, when people were away with teens and all. And that's where I met him back in the days when we were teenagers, and actually crossed paths with the Necro Butcher as well back then. So, you know, it's kind of weird how these things synchronize themselves in life, but we were making these connections all the way back then without realizing where we would all be later, you know. And then we probably all wouldn't be where we are now if we didn't have that influence back then, you know?
Yeah, it is crazy how your youth shapes you to become the person that you're going to be. But that's cool. Any thoughts on the Necro Butcher? That's a great guy that I think is, you know, he's out there, but, man, every car I've ever been on with him, we've had a really awesome time, and I think he's really unique.
But, yeah, back to what you were saying, man, those dudes are completely chill, man. You know, I'm happy for them. It's made all of them just be able to enhance who they are. You know, like Chris, you know, Adler is just a monster drummer because he's just a monster intense individual, you know, and he just gets into that. And then, like, you know, Willie and Campbell, they're just kind of having fun, man, so they enjoy the whole ride. And, you know, Mark and Randy, of course, do a lot of the writing. You know, Mark's one of the best guitarists. Actually, you know, speaking of that, there was a project they had back in the days with a old roommate of mine, Matt Connor, plays in RPG. But him and his wife and Mark playing guitar and one of the guys from Guar and, you know, just kind of like Richmond All-Stars, they had a country band called Corntooth that did a few tracks. I don't think they ever saw the light of day in terms of being published or anything, but, man, it was some good shit, man.
That sounds awesome. That would definitely be something I would be interested in hearing. You know, I have a lot of roots in the country music myself. My grandfather and my dad even as well, all country musicians. You know, I was kind of raised in that touring country band environment. You know, my family's been like a cover band. They basically travel, you know, just around the little area here now, but, you know, I've been doing it for like 30 years. So, you know, that old country really speaks to me. You know, this new shit, I don't even know what you'd want to call it, but people like Hank Green.
I agree completely, man, but I think that old outlaw country, that metal, that old kind of thrash vibe, all of it sinks in together, man. And, like, you see it everywhere, man. You see it in, like, you know, Lamb of God, Hank the Third. You see it in what I write. You see, you know, I mean, you see it in kids, you know, on these back roads. You know, you don't see it so much when you get to where things are sort of polished up. You know, they try to polish away the grime. But when people are allowed to let their grime shine, you see that. And people feel good with it, man. I mean, it's real, you know. And it's like you're saying, the new country stuff, that's not real. But, like, the outlaw stuff, the old stuff, you know, you put on Redheaded Stranger, that's real, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you can't find better examples of people singing from a place of heartache and misery and just really channeling those emotions to the listener. And that's really, you know, it goes back to, honestly, the David Allan Coe, The Ride. Mr. Can You Make Folks Cry When You Play and Sing? And then no matter what art form you're doing, that is your ultimate goal, whether it be in wrestling, whether it be as a musician, whether it be as an actor. You want to make folks feel the emotions you can feel, and that outlaw country does a special thing with that.
And that's it, man. So that's what I got to ask you, man, is me as someone who my art is words. That's all I think about is words all day long, you know. That's just what I do. So, like, you think about the wrestling and bringing out the emotion when you perform in front of people to get them out their seat and actually care and suspend the disbelief. When you talk about music, it's talking about something that just plucks at your inside, so you are just up and 110% adrenaline coursing through every artery in your body. So if I'm coming with writing, and right now I'm writing a collection of short stories, what I'm trying to do is write stories for people like us. And the problem is, I don't think people like us necessarily crack open a book as much as people. Yeah, the normal book buying public is not necessarily the normal flea market attending public, you know?
Oh,
but
yeah,
I agree. The problem I'm having right now is I am not wanting to be somebody who writes stories from where I'm from and then makes it like a vicarious thrill for people who have lived a more comfortable life. I want to write stories for people like us, because I grew up with the crazy uncles leaning on the back of the truck talking shit to each other for 3 hours straight until the cooler was empty and then somebody had to run to the store to get more. That's what I grew up with, and those are the storytellers that I try to be like, you know, so that when I was little, I would just be listening to these crazy wild tales, and I would look forward to, like, wow, man, when am I going to have the experiences to be talking this crazy shit at the back of the truck, you know? So that's the stories I'm writing, and I want people that would enjoy that type of stuff to be able to get into what I do, even though I don't even know where it's coming out. I don't know if it'll be published by, you know, a publisher, an independent publisher. I don't know if we'll be carving them into the back of stop signs on the side of the road. You know, I don't know. But we will get it out there. But I want people like us to be able to get into it, you know?
That's beautiful. I mean, that's the beauty of it, you know, and I think that I really think you're not falling on deaf ears there. I know that I agree with you. I don't think the salt of the earth Southern folk is really one to crack open a book, but I think you have such a unique voice and a unique life experience that you know.
But, you know, people... and that's the thing. That's the thing. That is the reputation, but it's not so much because they don't want to. It's because nobody's talking to them, you know?
Right.
Nobody's
telling
them. Nobody's telling them what they want to hear, you know? Nobody's telling them what they see. So that's the goal, man, you know? There's a lot of people that got a voice that don't get that voice heard, and I feel that, you know? It's like the whole Jimmy Valiant thing, man, the street people. the back roads people. That's my people, you know. That's who I grew up around. That's who I run with now, man. I feel more comfortable with that than I do anywhere, man. I got a job right now where I wear a button-down shirt to work every day. I feel like I'm choking. I done cut my hair, man. I still got my Viking beard because they can't take that. I got to have some hair hanging out looking dirty, you know?
Right, but, yeah, man.
You know, it's the street people, man. It's like the regular people, the regular kickback, don't give a shit people, you know?
Yeah, and in that vein, actually, let's move the discussion into another realm. You know, we talked about Lamb of God and their band that addresses things like this, and you talked about the street people and where you're coming from with your new literary ventures and where you want people to feel you in your heart. There's a crazy thing going on right now. Got a big election. You know, we talk a little bit about politics. I generally hate politics, but I'm always open to a fresh viewpoint, and if anybody can provide a fresh viewpoint on what's going on in the climate in the United States with this crazy election coming up, it's a guy like you. You don't have to say anything you don't want to. I'm not pressuring you to talk out of turn or say anything that might make you uncomfortable, but I just like your general opinion on all of the insanity that's going on moving towards this next election.
Well, man, my fresh perspective on this election, fuck them. Obama, fuck him. Romney, fuck him. Fuck him, man. You know? Fuck him.
Couldn't have said it better myself. You know, those fuckers ain't looking out for us. You know what I'm saying?
Nah, man, they ain't looking out for nothing, man. You know?
Damn fucking straight. Well, this has been a fascinating time, my friend. And not only has it been that, but it's been great catching up with you as a friend from me to you. I just want to say that, and I hope we can get together again real soon. I know you've had some musical ventures of your own, not really in the realm of what we cover here, but, man, I'm all for what the fuck ever. So anything you want to plug or talk about before we wrap up tonight, my friend?
If anybody goes into the Cyberbot interweb machine and they just type in Rojo Neku, RojoNekku, I've got website, I've got SoundCloud where I got a buddy who does kind of bluegrass music and we do like a, I don't know, man, I guess technically it would be called like a country hip-hop type thing, but when you say country hip-hop, that makes it sound stupid because most of the things people have heard that's like that are really dumb, but it's like, it's just what it is, man, you know. But anything Rojo Neku, you'll find it online, man. My name, Raven Mac, Raven McMillan, Thousand Feathers, Thousand Aliases, Confederate Mac. It's all me, man. I'm out there.
Fucking awesome, man. Well, I hope you will consider joining us again. You would be the type of guest I would actually bring in on a regular basis to maybe even have some kind of segment. So hit me up on the email or the Facebook after we're done here. We'll talk if you got the time and you got a particular gripe or bitch you want to make, man. I will give you the floor because I think that much of you, my friend.
Hey, Reverend Dan, I appreciate it, man. To be honest with you, I might have sounded like I was upset, but I got 4.5 acres. I got a hot wife. I got 3 daughters. I got 11 chickens. I got 2 pigs, 2 goats. I got a hound dog, and I got a truck. I'm doing all right, my man.
Hell yeah, man. That's what it's all about. You know, I just added a new addition to my family. I got a new wife.
Congratulations. Congratulations, man. I didn't know that.
Thank you. Yeah, I got a different wife than the one you met the last time. This one's much better. and then we have our first biological child together, and my first child, her name's Rory, and she just joined us this December, so she's a little bundle of joy, but I do appreciate it. And yeah, man, you're right. That is what it's all about, my friend.
Hell yeah, man.
All right. Well, thank you again for joining us, my brother. And we hope to have you on again in the future. It has been a blast, man.
All right, Reverend. Have a good one, my man.
You too, brother. Hold it down.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye. Raven Mac, ladies and gentlemen, what a fantastic perspective. Such a great human being and an interesting dude, man, here on the Midnight Black Mass. We're not done, fans. We got some comic book news. Just skip TV casualty due to time constraints this week because I don't like to half-ass anything. And I haven't got the chance to watch the episode again this week. Of course, with the Batman episodes, It's something I've seen a million times, so I could pull it out of my ass and recite it. But you, the listening audience of the Midnight Black Mass, you deserve that much better. So we're going to continue with our summer tour theme tonight. Got a little Motley Crue coming off of back to 1982 with Too Fast for Love. This is Come On and Dance. edition of the Midnight Black Mass. You heard part two of the Big Summer Tour song contingent that was Kiss with I Stole Your Love off the legendary Love Gun record. Prior to that, Come On and Dance by Motley Crue off of Too Fast for Love. If you're listening to this show, you probably own those albums. But if you don't, go to Amazon.com or iTunes.com and purchase your copy of all those albums that we played today. Going to wrap it up with some comic book news. Not a big news week, but we'll mention a couple of things. The poster for the Wolverine has been unveiled. It shows the Japanese flag with the three claw marks. And for 2013's release of the sequel to X-Men First Class Wolverine, and supposedly with a decidedly different take on the old Knucklehead. That's going to play up the classic Chris Claremont and Frank Miller Wolverine miniseries set in Japan as the basis for that. Captain Marvel has appeared in DC Comics, now named Shazam, in the Justice League issue number 7. And that was a fantastic read. Speaking of fantastic things in the comic book realm, let's talk for just a moment about The Walking Dead and what a fantastic season 2 turned out to be. We definitely had more plans in mind to talk about it this week, but next week it's definitely going to happen. Didn't really materialize. A lot of dissenting opinions of fans of the comic book. Not happy with the way they changed the major arc, and I, for one, was thrilled with it. I've already read the comic book. I don't need to see it again. Reenacted panel for panel, and I like the way they did it, especially with where they brought the characters at that point in time in the series. It would have been uncharacteristic for the things that happened in the comic books to happen the way they did in the series, because they hadn't put the characters at that level emotionally. So I was very happy with The Walking Dead Season 2 overall, and I thought the finale was one of the greatest episodes in the history of television. And, spoiler alert, we have now seen Michonne. She's going to be joining the series. There was a backstory of her written and issued exclusively in Playboy magazine, but if you look real hard on the internet, you can find it showing her origin, which they'd only alluded to in the Walking Dead comic by Image Comics. So, a very exciting times if you're a fan of the zombie genre. But that's really all we got in the realm of comic book news, except for I want to tell you that if you're a fan of Batman, you definitely need to go check out the new 52s, just simply titled Batman comic. I just finished the first arc, 7 issues, introducing the Court of Owls. And, man, that is some intense stuff. An Illuminati-like secret society pulling the strings of Gotham City and sending their assassin, the Talon, out after the Batman. And, man, it's a hairy story full of lots of twists and turns. Oh, before we go, just want to remind you, April 1st, Marvel debuts their own animation block called Marvel Universe, featuring Ultimate Spider-Man and Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
By GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.